Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Courtwright, an American scholar and peace activist. He is the Director of Policy Studies at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame and chair of the board of Fourth Freedom Forum. In 1978, he was named the executive director of the Committee for a Sane Nuclear Policy, which under his direction became the largest disarmament organization in the United States. Thereafter, he initiated the merger of SANE and the Nuclear Weapons Freeze Campaign and served for a time as co-director of the merged organization. In 2002, he helped to found the Win Without War Coalition in opposition to the United States invasion of Iraq. His most recent books are Towards Nuclear Zero and Peace, A History of Movements and Ideas. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Courtwright.
Thank you, Ian.
And the drone issue has become quite central to the anti-war movement, and people feel very passionately about it in terms of obviously, real moral issues are being raised. What is your understanding of what it is about the drones and the use of drones that people find so offensive? Because, clearly, in the overall scheme of war, it's all pretty offensive,
Right, but this is basically a policy of targeted killing. It's assassination of people by our government, and we're acting without any basis in law against those who we claim to be our enemies in countries like Pakistan or Yemen, where we have never had any formal declaration of military hostilities. In fact, Pakistan is supposed to be our ally, and we're giving them probably $2 billion a year in military and other kinds of assistance. So it's a policy that is completely without any basis in law, maybe in Afghanistan, arguably because of the congressional authorization for military force, there might be an argument, but in these other places, not at all. And who is to judge who might be worthy of being attacked by our American forces? There's no court of law. These attacks outside Afghanistan are being managed by the CIA, an organization notorious for having committed many crimes in the past and also for being disastrously wrong in many of its previous supposed intelligence operations. So many troubling moral and political issues are raised by this. How can we, as a nation, be engaged in this policy of targeted killing and assassination around the world? And what happens as other nations begin to acquire this technology, as inevitably they will, and in fact already dozens of nations are either building them or purchasing them?
Again, I'm speaking with David Courtwright, American scholar and peace activist. He's the director of policy studies at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame and chair of the board of Fourth Freedom Forum. And we're talking about the prospect of a global drone warfare in a sense, blowback since the U.S. developed drones, and it appears to be the weapon of choice, particularly in Afghanistan and inside of Pakistan as well, and in Yemen. Inevitably, this monopoly will not last, and we're talking about how soon that things will change. Now, meanwhile, the program itself, of course, the Air Force apparently initially resisted the drone program. It started with the CIA, and they were the first to put these Hellfire missiles on the Predator drones, which were designed for surveillance, but then they found a way that they could have an offensive capability, and that's obviously grown. I believe there's a new generation of Predators that are much bigger, longer range, and have more firepower. But all along, apparently, the Air Force has resisted the drones program, but apparently former Secretary of Defense Gates was the one who pushed it through. And now you have this peculiar thing because the reason the Air Force didn't like it was that it's pilotless, and There's the pilot lobby within the Air Force lobby, and they apparently have been fairly vocal. But now they seem to have come to some bizarre compromise where highly trained American pilots for, you know, flying these new generation aircraft at, you know, enormous taxpayer investment in their training sit at consoles now and with a little toggle switch and fly these drones over Pakistan. Does that strike you as being a bit peculiar?
It is. It's weird, and it's rather frightening, I think. And I read recently that there are actually more drone, quote, pilots being trained than regular flying pilots. But yes, to think of it that our new pilots, as they're being called, are based in a set of computers somewhere in a base, and they're looking at screens and killing people thousands of miles away, and then they're leaving the office and going home and, you know, taking the kids to their soccer match or whatever, and it's very bizarre. We're separating the soldiers, in this case the pilots, those who are engaged in military action, we're separating them from the consequences of the actual killing that goes on in war. And that's always a morally troubling development. And because they're so separated, they have, of course, no risk. They're just there at the base in front of these screens all day. So their lives are never put at risk. And that's why Secretary Gates and now Panetta have been praising these weapons. And they appear to make war less costly. It's sort of war on the cheap. And any activity that makes war seem less costly inevitably makes war potentially more likely. It sort of lowers the moral threshold. It lowers the political bar for a president who might want to engage in military action. They don't have to worry about the backlash that would come from our citizens over our pilots and our soldiers being killed in war. Now we are under the illusion that we can kill without incurring any costs to ourselves. And that's, I think, a very dangerous development that will certainly in the future make war more likely, if not by our own leaders, then by others.
Well, apparently, though, there's a new generation of drones being developed by military planners that they're autonomous, so that the drone itself makes the decisions to fire.
Yeah, it's called smart technology, yeah. I mean, this is under consideration, and there is some technological development, some experimentation underway on this. They haven't made the decision yet, but yes, this is because one of the problems they're finding is that there is some time lag between when the pilots on their monitors are certain that the target is in a particular location, and then from that time until they send the signal to the aircraft and the missile is launched. So the military planners want to have a quicker response time, and the only way to do that is to give the aircraft itself the capability of deciding that this is the target, yes, and then firing the missile. So we potentially have machines. This development will be probably a decade or more in the future, but potentially machines that would be making the decision to kill humans.
So, David Courtright, the drone war began in Pakistan in 2004. And apparently there have been about 2,000 people being killed in these drone strikes since then. What's your understanding of the ratio of so-called bad guys, I guess they call them, or high-value targets or whatever, and the collateral damage, which would be civilians and families of, you know, of the people that they're killing?
Yeah, the so-called collateral damage issue. Whenever you're firing weapons into houses or cars, or you're inevitably going to kill innocent people. Civilians will die. And in this case, in terms of the Pakistan war, we really have no way of knowing precisely, because who's giving the information? Well, mostly it's from the CIA and from military intelligence. We also hear from the other side, from the militants and the Taliban who are targeted, you know, inflated figures. In fact, at one point, the counterterrorism chief at the White House, Brennan, claimed, I think it was in June of this year, he claimed that there were no civilians killed over the previous year by our drone attacks. Well, they quickly backed off of that outlandish claim. But how many civilians have been killed, we don't know. There is an organization in UK, the Investigative Bureau, Journalist Investigative Bureau, I forget the full title, and they've been investigating, and their methodology is to take all of the news accounts of each particular incident, the news accounts that come from the U.S. and the West, and also those from the people on the ground in Pakistan, and try to look at the numbers and evaluate which is the most accurate. And what they found is that there are civilian casualties documented in about 1 out of 5 attacks. And of the more than 2,000 who have died in these drone attacks since the war began in Pakistan, the number of civilians is estimated to be somewhere between 300 and 700. So it's a very wide range, which tells you we really don't know that much, but at least gives you some order of magnitude that maybe 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 of the people who are being killed in these attacks are clearly civilians. But I think the number is higher because, you know, we call these people militants and terrorists, but what does that mean? You know, maybe they have taken up weapons in an insurgency in northern Pakistan that's also related to the insurgency in Afghanistan. Are they mortal enemies of the United States, or are they fighting for because they don't like the governments in Afghanistan, or they don't like American troops occupying Afghanistan as they see it? So what gives us the right to kill those kind of people, and can we say that they are terrorists or enemies of the United States? So how we define these categories is a tricky one. Also, we know that many of the people who have been taking up arms against either the Afghan government or our own troops, they're not necessarily trained fighters. They may be farmers during the day or working as mechanics during the day, but then at night they're out with the militant groups. They're guerrillas who are fighting this insurgent war. So how do we categorize them? They're certainly not uniformed military. So this is very tricky ground as well. It adds to the moral dilemmas in terms of how we define the targets, supposed targets, and are they truly dangerous and threatening to the United States, to international security in any way? If we look at it that way, then my guess is that many of the those who are being killed are not truly threats to international security or to the United States.
Well, it would seem, David Courtright, that, I mean, there's just so many questions to ask here, and we don't know what the targeting protocols are. You know, the CIA have their program. The Air Force has its program. How far up the chain for authorization goes, what the flexibility is of those manning these controls, these remote controls, watching a television set. None of that we really have a clear picture on. We know that people are on the ground in the Waziristan and in Pakistan providing evidence. We know that from the attack on Massoud, the head of the Pakistan Taliban. Apparently somebody got his father-in-law to drop a dime on him, if you will. They bribed this guy a lot of money. And, of course, it turned out his own daughter was killed along with Massoud. She was giving him a massage at apparently the time that the missile struck. So it's very sort of odd that you got people on the ground, but you need this thing, this high-tech thing, to do the actual job. But the other thing that bothers me is that since these new military industrial complex companies are dealing with drones, and I don't know which of the contractors have stolen a march on the technology, but I don't know what restraints are on them in terms of foreign sales. You say the Brits and the and the Israelis are, also in the business and probably not too far behind the United States.
Well, and it is a business because if you go on the internet, you can find drones for rent or for hire, so to speak. So, and we know in the military contracting business that we see very rampant in Afghanistan and Iraq, there are very few controls, if any. Military contracting is very much a monopoly, sweetheart kind of business, where relationships are based on connections that are made, and there's no very little accountability, a great deal of corruption. So this is the other side of it. The industrial side is going to be pushing this to develop more and more of these weapons. They obviously have this self-interest, and we've seen in many other cases where weapons are built largely at the impetus of contractors who have very cozy connections with not only the Pentagon, but also with the members of Congress. You know, there's now a drone caucus in the U.S. Congress. There are dozens of members of Congress, probably those who have contractors or subcontractors in their districts who stand to make money on this business.
Well, but you just mentioned, David Cordwright, that there are companies who can hire drones. I mean, what kind of restrictions are on that, and what would the purpose of hiring a drone be?
These are surveillance ones right now.
Right, but I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, could an estranged husband hire a drone to fly over his ex-wife's house or something? I mean,
yeah, one wonders, right?
I mean, the other thing that, just in closing, David Cordwright, the one thing that I wonder about is as bad as the military situation is and as murky as the whole picture is that you're giving us here today, I wonder, in terms of law enforcement, how long before the LAPD is flying drones over South Central Los Angeles, for example?
No, it's bound to happen with this technology spreading, and I'd be surprised if it's not already out there. Hopefully, you know, if that were to happen, maybe it would alert Americans to the threat that these systems pose, and we might get some action to put some controls on them, but it's just absolutely necessary that these things be brought under some form of public control, some accountability, and certainly we need to get the CIA out of this business. I mean, this is a historically new and very dangerous development that the CIA is actively involved in military operations. And now we know in the bad old days that they've been doing these covert operations all around the world since the end of the Cold War, and that's bad enough. But now they've been given a formal military role in conducting combat operations through this technology and relying on supposed sources to spot who the targets are to be in these places like Waziristan and northern Pakistan. Who are the people that they're relying on, and are they truly legitimate sources of information? Maybe they have their own political agendas or grudges that they're trying to even up and getting the United States to fall into that trap. We've seen a lot of this did occur in Iraq, probably is occurring in Afghanistan and Pakistan as well. So this is another aspect of the danger that's being developed here through the use of these drones and the assigning of the CIA of all organizations in the world that we would least want to have managing such a program. Here it is.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, David Cordwright.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with David Cordwright, an American scholar and peace activist. He's the Director of Policy Studies at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and he's the chair of the board of the Fourth Freedom Forum. His most recent books are Towards Nuclear Zero and Peace, A History of Movements and Ideas. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbons. And this program's available at ianmasters.com, where you can sign up for podcasts and contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.